and welcome to this lockdown episode of the Toffee Blues Everton News Feed podcast. I am standing in for Jerry this time round. What's Jerry up to these days? Heard from?
No, to be honest, not directly. I know he's obviously like everyone else. He's dealing with coronavirus himself, and he's got, you know, kids and that. You know, got a. I'm not even sure if his work ever allows him to go home. I'm not entirely sure what his situation is, but I know he's a lot busier than I am. So yeah. I'm sure he'll make a triumphant return before the lockdown's over. But I'm not entirely sure when that is. So I've been doing a couple of podcasts with James and one with our Paul, and it's nice to see you, mate. How are you coping with the Isle solitary confinement?
I'm all right. Bit tough doing the prison workouts with very limited resources at hand, but you know, I'm coping pretty well with it, to be fair. I enjoy it. As I was saying to you off camera, I've got to be honest, because I'm indulged in the sort of world of podcasts and what have you. I don't necessarily need an excuse to socially isolate, you know what I mean? Like, I'd quite gladly stay in my room and listen to podcasts and watch podcasts all day. But that's what we're essentially going to get the ball rolling with and discuss. Like, what have you been consuming in while you've had nothing but time?
Well, I'm like yourself. I've struggled less than most. Like, I don't want to, you know, make light of it, you know, because a lot of people are struggling financially and stuff like that. And I'm quite lucky in the sense that I'm not. I've got a job that's quite facilitating, so I'm happy about that. But I don't mind being in the house. I mean, don't get me wrong. This isn't like time off in the traditional sense, because even like things like, oh, you can't even enjoy, you know, football or going like to your parents' house or anything like that, because I am on proper lockdown. I haven't even been over my front door in 7 days. So I've been watching like a lot of stuff and listening to a lot of podcasts and all that. But the main thing I've watched that I can, you know, the number one thing I've watched is, come as no surprise to most, is Tiger King. I think everyone's watched that. You know, I spoke to you off camera just to see if you'd seen it. You'd sort of made the start, but I haven't followed it up yet. Max, you need to, mate. It's absolutely round the bend. Go on.
I was just going to say, like, I think the sole reason why I'm watching it, because I've got to a point now where, honestly, like, looking at my Netflix and looking at my watch history, I get, like, 20 minutes, half an hour into something, and I'm just like, yeah, it just seems like another sort of glossy Netflix-produced sort of dead subject, if that makes sense. But yeah. I've started on Tiger King purely so all the memes start making sense, because all I'm getting is like Carol Baskin memes, and I'm like, yeah, come on, I don't get it. But what I've found quite funny, like, not exactly spoilers, but I'm like, as I say, like 20 minutes into the first episode, every single individual that works on that zoo just seems absolutely batshit crazy. Like, people have got missing teeth, no legs, no arms, all this.
The people who work at that zoo are the most normal out of everyone. That's the thing. The deeper you get into it, it doesn't give you the minute. The first episode is quite a gentle introduction, I think. You know, I watched it because I got told it was brilliant, but I didn't know that it was crazy. When I first watched it, it was quite early after it had been released. So I didn't look any further into it. There was no memes or anything at that point. So I just put it on, and I'm like big into animals and stuff. So I thought it'd be about the zoo in the sense of, you know, oh, this guy's got, you know, hundreds of tigers, and, you know, there's more tigers in captivity in America than there is in the wild and so on. Oh, mate, the animals are like not even important in it. Not really. It's just all about the people. And once you get over the hump of the first episode, it doesn't give you a second. It just knocks you on the mat and doesn't let you get up. It's there's loads of people in it, and they're all scumbags, every single one of them. And you go on like an emotional roller coaster because sometimes you like some of them, and then another episode likes to show you more about them, and you don't like them. And then you'll like seesaw back, and you know you'll see something in a different light, and you'll go, oh well, actually, I don't think they're that bad after all. Oh, mate, I don't want to go into too much detail because you know the more surprises the better. But I'm telling you, all the people with missing teeth and missing limbs and all that—they're the most down to earth, normal people in it.
Yeah,
it's absolutely off the wall. It's so crazy. You'll message me when you've watched it and gone and just go, oh my god. I introduced my sister to it and she just binged it. I think there's 7 episodes, an hour each, and she watched them all last night. I had to do it in 2 sittings because I was exhausted halfway through, and she was just like, I can't believe what I'm seeing. It's so good.
I'll binge it. Funnily enough as well, I didn't mention it, but I was like, obviously, my first sort of instinct when all this sort of got announced, that like potential lockdown and whatnot, was like, obviously, I've moved straight back to Liverpool to make sure the family and then are all right. And I didn't have me Xbox in Manchester, and I've started gaming again, and I found one of the Call of Duties from my Xbox 360 has been backwards compatible in the Xbox One. And you're talking about binge watching. I completed the full campaign in one day. So just wasting time by the bucket load, but when you've got nothing but time to kill it, I suppose what you're supposed to do in it, really. Anyway, just to sort of tick off what we're meant to be covering in this podcast, firstly, obviously, it's the thing that's on everybody's lips, fans, governing bodies, clubs, pretty much everybody that's interested in football and sport as a whole, really, is about the current state, obviously, in particular for the Premier League, should it be voided, talking about the ifs and buts and the sort of discussion that's happening in and around that. Then we're going to be moving on to quite an interesting thing and something that I'm looking forward to. Everton, and hats off to the club, they have been coming up with some fairly good content in this time. It's obviously provided a lot of good opportunities for football clubs to take advantage of. Put a little thing on their Instagram story yesterday, it was a template for the best Everton 11 in my lifetime. And I seen Terry's, and while mine and Terry's do overlap somewhat, there are some notable differences, which I think will be an interesting discussion. And then just to wrap the show up with some genuine discussion, I was thinking we're going to talk about again sort of what we've been watching and what we plan to do during lockdown. Cool. So, right, onto I suppose the most contentious thing to discuss during this time of no football. And again, it has been hard, hasn't it? Like, the sort of, I've got to be honest, like, and I know this might sound really, really sad, but losing that structure of Saturdays when the football's played, it's like it just thrown me life into some sort of abyss, like having a complete absence of football. Like I'm going back and I'm watching classic matches and, you know, World Cup finals, Champions League finals, old Everton matches. But at this present moment in time, hotly contested, as I say, amongst many individuals involved in football, like what are we actually going to do with the remaining 92 games that are left to play? Now, the Premier League official communications have come out and said that they were looking to, you know, play has essentially been postponed until the 30th of April, meaning that games would not commence until May, which surely you agree with me here, Terry, but I think it's going to be a long while after that.
Yeah, I mean, just, you know, on the record, like, the governing bodies and all the clubs have said, haven't they, they're committed to like completing the season, which, you know, all like, you know, obvious, you know, jokes aside, I don't think anyone wants it to be cancelled. I think a lot of people expect it to, because if you just look at the other things that have been cancelled, like Wimbledon's been cancelled now.
Grand National.
This is the thing. Wimbledon is due to be played the end of June, start of July. Now, I don't see how sporting events, even behind closed doors, with the amount of, you know, things that need to go on there, can be played in May. with the way things are now. I would love it to be the case. Like, I've said it on previous shows, like, I was dead against playing behind closed doors early in this, you know, predicament that we're in. And now I'd give me a right arm for it. Like, I just want football back and miss it. Everyone misses it. This has shown, this period, that it doesn't matter whether your team's good or whether your team's terrible, it's your team, and it's such a big part of your life. You know, you go online, you read the paper, you do everything, you listen to the radio. It's all about football for a lot of people, and, you know, we're the same. Like, I now I'm seeing, like, transfer stories online, I'm just going, there's probably nothing in that because they're all at home. Then, like, what are they, you know, like, how is that getting out if it's true? Because they're probably not even speaking to each other, you know, clubs and whatnot at this point, because they don't know when they can even complete deals. And if they are talking to each other, how can anyone get that information if it's in a phone call? So it's just, you can't even get into anything like that. There's been a few things mentioned, hasn't there? Like, little, like, mini World Cup style, you know, like, playing out of games, which has been rubbish by, like, a lot of pundits and stuff, as being, like, irresponsible and unrealistic. I don't see it getting completed. Like, I think it'd be a disaster for every single club in the country, big and small, for the reasons we'll go into. But I just don't see how. I'd love it to be completed, and I'd love it to, you know, improve so rapidly that we can get back to it. But, you know, no one is able to convince me how it'd happen.
Yeah, so this sort of World Cup style approach, I think it initially came out from an article by Miguel Delaney in the Independent, and, you know, full credit to Miguel Delaney. Like, I've met the guy. I think the stuff he gets out there is really good. But this sort of format of, obviously, 92 games remaining, and playing them in a sort of essentially a World Cup style format, which means, say, there'd be a couple of televised games a day. I think that obviously that rears the head to a couple of different things. Firstly, I think it shows the importance of broadcasters to the game. Like, I'm essentially doing my dissertation on it. Like, it's not so much, it's sad to say, I think it's a sort of harsh truth now that broadcasters are, if not the most important shareholders in football, given the revenue that they pump into the game now. And I think the government actually, I think in the article it highlighted that the government are in favour of the idea because they quite like the prospect of the nation sort of having something to do in terms of having a national sport event to watch. And I think that was summed up quite nicely by my mate in one of my recent episodes of my podcast, where he said football is the most important of the least important things, in a sense. So while it's deemed non-essential, it does really bring a sense of community to people. However, and this is where my sort of view, this is where I stand on the whole conundrum, essentially, is that, yes, okay, you can play games behind closed doors, but take for example Mikel Arteta, obviously the manager of Arsenal, and I think the whole sort of coronavirus COVID-19 pandemic hit me once I found out that my childhood hero had it. Like, if he's the manager of Arsenal, obviously I think he's tested negative for it now. I think it was his birthday the other day and he come out that he's tested negative for it. But I think there's been examples of people who have tested positive for it who eventually been tested negative or sort of gone into remission and tested positive for it again. So, like you're saying, there are so many elements to a football game, the crowd aside, you know, it's like medical professionals, officials, on the bench, you're obviously that's completely bypassing social distancing, as it were. So I think, yeah, you can play games behind closed doors in order to try and fulfill the, you know, the demands of broadcasters to get their money's worth. But players are still really a high risk, essentially. If there are, you know, I think one of the key figures in football that first came out of being tested positive was the chairman of Nottingham Forest, if I'm not wrong. And this has sort of had a domino effect of, you know, obviously Mikel and then a couple of other figures. So like Callum Hudson-Odoi at Chelsea. So, you know, I think that's where I stand on it. I think Rooney put it, I think it was his first article in the Times he come out with, where essentially he said he doesn't mind the idea of the 2021 season starting late. So it just basically resume as soon as possible, whenever that may be. But it also sort of acclimatizes the international players for by the time the World Cup in Qatar rolls around, which would be 2022. But again, there's just so much ambiguity surrounding it. And it doesn't help the fact that there's two major international competitions. Obviously, the Euros has been moved to 2021 now, and we don't know what impact that's going to have into the World Cup. But as I say, I genuinely don't think anyone can say with much certainty at the moment when play is going to resume, in a sense. Again, like, what do you feel about all of this?
I mean, it just can't. It just can't resume, whether they want it or not. Like, they can say, you know, and I agree, it would be a massive boon to the, you know, the efforts of the governments, whatever, to have football back on. Just, you know, for the national morale, if anything. And not everyone likes football, but enough people do, you know what I mean? Like, a distraction and what have you. But if it is voided, it'd be absolutely catastrophic to every club, big, small, whatever, because there's, you know, most clubs now are operating. Well, I can only speak for Premier League clubs. It goes without saying the lower league clubs would all be financially devastated because they're, you know, relying on match day revenue and what have you. The bigger clubs, the Premier League clubs, who aren't so much relying on match day revenue, you know, they are very much relying on TV money revenue, and that would be thrown into question if they don't fulfil the games they've got lined up. Now, all right, it's an unprecedented situation, and I think the broadcasters would be, like, ill-served to go against the decision, even if it is, you know, to not pay the money if it's voided, because it isn't sort of a decision that the legal have made likely or the clubs have made likely, and, the broadcasters want to be very careful, because when this gets back to normal, and it eventually will, the league and the clubs will remember that, you know, if these clubs are still around, that the TV companies withheld the money for something that wasn't their fault. And it when it comes to renewing the deals, they might, you know, clubs might look to break away and do this, you know, this Netflix of Premier League idea that it's been touted. But there's a lot of clubs, you know, like, even the bigger ones, Man United, Liverpool, what have you, who've got massive revenue streams, they can't survive without the Premier League TV money. The wage bills are too big. Like, it doesn't matter how many shirts you sell in, like, China and Australia and America, it's not enough to pay these massive, massive contracts. They've got Everton be the same, we're massively reliant on the TV money. I mean, I don't know whether it'd just be prudent to do that. You know, Rooney's idea, just let it come back in September, whenever it is, and then, you know, have a short break with no, you know, because the players need, like, a short break and then a short pre-season, then back into the football. It'd be bizarre from a supporter's point of view to, like, you know, get used to that, because it'd be so different to normal. But then do you count this time off that they've got now as a rest, as a break to the players? I don't think the players feel rested because it's stressful. No. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
When we start again, even if we were to start again, like, soon, you'd still need, like, a little acclimatization period of training and what have you. And if it goes on for a long time, you wouldn't just need training. You'd need, like, pre-season games and all the equivalents. And, you know, it probably wouldn't be international at that point. It'd be, you know, we'd play Tranmere and Chester and what have you. That's even if they still exist at that time. It's such a bizarre, unprecedented scenario. And even the Premier League clubs, the Super Elite clubs, they aren't guaranteed to be so financially secure that they can sort of weather the fallout if it's voided. The voiding of this league might see some big name clubs go to the wall because of the way they're managed and the you know, money aspect. Because even clubs that are well run and live within their means, they're budgeted on that TV money. And if it doesn't, you know, all come in, and all the match day revenue and everything on top of it, you're relying on a rich owner to basically underwrite those losses. And who's to say, you know, some of them can even do it, because, you know, there's going to be a global recession on the back of this, or they at least predict there will be. So, you know, some owners could find they've not got as much money as they used to, or they're not as willing to underwrite, you know, costs for a, you know, a Premier League club. I don't know. I mean, voiding, as much as everyone would go, oh, Liverpool lost the league and all that, it would be a very bad thing for all the clubs. Just play it, let them win it, and they can't even have a parade. So this season won't be remembered for that anymore anyway. It'll be remembered for the virus, so you just let them win it. Come on. Yeah. I know. It's even if it does come back, there's going to be huge ramifications for football. It could have come at the very worst time for us. They could have a huge deflation effect on, like, say, transfer.
Carlo Ancelotti come out and said something similar to that, didn't he? Saying that could be one of the huge adaptations that the football industry have to take. It's like obviously, over the last couple of years, we've gone through. I think it was all triggered by Neymar's transfer, almost the sort of inflation of transfer fees and the industry as a whole. But yeah,
that was the sort of, you know, just the pillar sort of transfer where it gets tied to. But it was a lot of the TV revenue and all that. So the Premier League. The Premier League was the straw that stirred the drink, really, wasn't it? Because, you know, all this Premier League money, you know, clubs like Bournemouth were like richer than Valencia and, you know, teams like that. And just basically all the Premier League money would go out and onto the continent, and then that would just spin around the continent. But that the source of a lot of the money, apart from the very big clubs like, say, Madrid or Barcelona, Bayern Munich, most of the money that was washing around was just the money that started in the Premier League, which come from Sky and BT and what have you. I still think there'll be that money, but I think this will have significantly spooked enough clubs to spend less. So in order to get players off your books, you'll have to price them as a lot lower. We're in this phase where we need to still be selling. You know, we're still looking to shift players like Cenk Tosun and Morgan Schneiderlin, say, sorry, Max. But, it could have a massive negative effect on us because we won't be able to generate the funds that we thought we might be able to. But then, on the other hand, it might not even come to a recession. Like, you know, you just don't know, because there's no way of knowing. It could be that prices go up because clubs are looking to, you know, recoup even more money to make themselves more financially stable. But this is... Yeah. I mean, I'm not an expert, but I think as well this is going to scare any clubs who are relying on banks, because the instability of it will scare banks, because banks will basically look and go, well, the revenue of a football club is not guaranteed. They're not always going to complete their season. So if we can complete the season, that'd be better on the financial front of things, because it'll show, look, even in the most unlikely and severe of circumstances, we still completed our obligations and still earned the money that we were projected to or the clubs to. If it's voided and we lose a load of money, then banks will be wary to touch football again, because their income streams will not be nailed on, which is what they need to lend.
100%. TIFO Football have been coming up with some pretty good articulate content, as they always tend to with their YouTube videos and the podcast and whatnot. And as you rightly said, Terry, I think most of, if not all, Premier League clubs are self-sufficient as a virtue of the TV monies that's generated, but the real sort of serious consequences of this, as you say, is when you start looking at the EFL clubs, and when you start looking at the teams lower down the pyramid, where I think most of them don't live within the means, as you say, depending on loans and what have you. I think player wages is the key sort of outgoing that puts them spending out of the means. But you know, as you say, there could be obviously we've seen what sort of transpired with Bury. I've got a bad feeling that might carry over, and we might see a couple of other bankruptcies as time progresses. But fingers crossed that won't be the case, because, like I said, this does also provide an opportunity for football clubs to be more humanitarian during this time. Obviously, we're seeing the paying of non-playing staff. And we are seeing some bad examples as well of sort of players being let go and some you know, under-18 squads not being paid, which I do think is disgraceful in all honesty, given that you are generating enough money to pay them. But as we say, it is early doors, and this lockdown's only just started, and it's very surreal, unprecedented times, and you know, there's bound to be, there's more that, you know, we'll have a clearer picture as time goes on, I imagine.
A lot of the negative, you know, effects will be mitigated if we've managed to complete the season. However we do it, if we manage to do it, then it won't be a fatal injury, it'll just be an injury. But I just don't see how. It looks really, really unlikely, regardless of how much it's needed by those clubs, because there's things that are on in July, not you know, they're getting cancelled, Wimbledon, as I said. And yeah, you know, there's always the option, well, why don't we start much later, you know, carry on, do this league in September or what have you. You've got to get other federations, this is another problem, you've got to get other federations to agree with that. How does the transfer window work? How do other things work in union with that? There's so many moving parts to account for.
Definitely. I think we covered all bases there, have we not?
Yeah, I mean,
yeah.
It's one of those scenarios where it's all just opinion. There's no certainty at the time of recording. There's no certainty. There's no decisions made. It's all just, you know, up in the air. And even at the very top of the game, I think it's up in the air. I don't think anyone knows how to do this, because there's the things that, you know, there's probably no legislation for a global pandemic stopping the whole of football at once, apart from Belarus, some reason. The only things that were nailed on were, you know, the timetables. They were the most concrete thing in football. You play on these days and these months and what have you. And we'll be feeling this for so long. Like this, even if it's only a couple of months of lockdown, the ramifications of this will go on for years, like, you know, tournament-wise and everything else. And, yeah.
It's rough. And as you say, like, different federations, I think, today, actually, UEFA have come out and said that Europa League and Champions League games are going to be suspended indefinitely. So, again, as you say, ramifications abound. So,
they won't be coming back. Even if the league's complete, I don't see the European competitions coming back
for a while. No. Fingers crossed that there's got to be a clinical process that takes place, and it'll probably take a few months. But fingers crossed the vaccine gets sorted sooner rather than later, because that's when I feel like things will start kicking into gear again.
That'd be the magic bullet. It's not as easy as all that, but I mean, if you manage to do that, then you could start to, you know, turn the wheels of everything else coming back. Then you wouldn't need everyone to be vaccinated before you opened up things again, but you'd be able to get, you know, NHS staff done and what have you, and then bit by bit. But I don't know. I just hope it's completed. The novelty and the enjoyment of Liverpool missing out on the title will be tainted by the negative effect it'd have on everyone else. If Everton came out smelling like roses, I'd be all up for it, but they won't. And I can't. It's not good. It's not enough of a temptation for me to wish for it. And now everyone's, all the Reds accusers of wishing for it. We don't. We just think that'd be the only positive in a sad situation, let's be honest.
Yeah, it transcends football, and on a sort of, on a human note, I hope everybody that's listening in the audience, staying safe out there, staying indoors and looking after them and those close to them.
Yeah, that goes without saying. Obviously, people might be screaming at me now going, fucking, you know, fat dickhead. It's only you're laughing about football and there's people dying. Listen, my wife works for the NHS. I know full well what the situation is, but this is a football podcast. You try and look at it from a different angle, I suppose, and get something out of it. This strange, unprecedented situation.
On a lighter note, as previously mentioned, this has been obviously uncertain times, but it's provided a lot of opportunities for football clubs to make use of some sort of, you know, some very unique content. Obviously, I've seen the likes of the official FIFA channels again classic matches, the UEFA as well, getting classic matches out there. Everton have been streaming old games, which I know this podcast will get out there, I imagine, a day or so after the 1st of April. But on this day in 1970, we picked up our seventh league title, which is pretty cool. But as I was saying, Everton, the official Everton Instagram account, put a template on their story for fans to utilise to name their best Everton 11 during their lifetime. Now, I was born in 1998. It handed me quite a lot of disadvantages, I would say. I've missed out on some absolutely legendary players. So, like, obviously players from the 80s. Now, Tom, who also does these podcasts, has the upper hand on me. He was born in 1997. And he said he was doing his research, and it allowed him to have Neville Southall in goal. And he put Dave Watson in goal as well, in a centre-half, which I think he must have only been about two when he was playing. And I mean, I've judged them off players that I've actually seen play and judge with my own two eyes.
Yeah, so, I've done that. I've not included players from when I was 6 months old, because if I did, my team would look a lot different, but I couldn't speak to it. I'm just assured they were good because I've not...
he missed out including Andrei Kanchelskis as well, because he was born a couple of months after he left, so he couldn't put him in there. But I don't think he would have put him in there anyway. So right, we're just gonna reel these off, and I suppose we can quiz each other on our selections as we go through them. So for me, formation, I've gone for a diamond 4-4-2. And for my chosen manager, I know he's only been at us a couple of months, but it is pretty self-explanatory, isn't it? I mean, the man's won Champions League galore as a manager and a player, gone with Carlo Ancelotti. David Moyes coming close second. Obviously, he was here for, I think it was 11 years. Obviously, the man I've grew up watching as Everton manager. And, I still hold Moyes in very high regard, how he managed to turn our fortunes around from, you know, the catastrophic situation in the 90s to put us in there as a contender for European places. And then in third place, going to have to go for Mr. Roberto Martinez, now manager of Belgium. I think in my time as an Evertonian, we probably played our best football under him. But I think at the same time, the most frustrating football as time progressed. In goal, number 24, got to be Tim Howard. I obviously, in terms of Everton players that I've met, Tim Howard right up there with being one of the nicest guys. I remember when I was younger doing my work experience in high school at Finch Farm, he gave me a pair of signed boots, and he just sort of endeared himself to me half from then. Me back four, I'm pretty sure they played together all together at the same time. Seamus Coleman at right back, Sylvain Distan at centre-half, who also responded to me starting 11 when I put it up on my Instagram story. sent me a little heart eyes emoji. And he had to go at me for not putting him at left centre-back. It was my mistake. I put him at right centre-back rather than left centre-back. He's a left-footed, isn't he?
Yeah.
At the other centre-half, and I know you're probably going to have a go at me for this, I put John Stones. Left back goes to train Leighton Baines. Now, me midfield, I think this would be a pretty well functioning midfield. I think it's got a good balance of players that can attack but also know the defensive responsibility. Holding midfield, Idrissa Garnagay. On the right side, Mikel Arteta. On the left side, Stephen Pienaar. And the head of the diamond, Tim Cahill. Me two up front, I've gone for Wayne Rooney. Yes, I know he did come back in his 30s, but watching him when he was younger, when he was like 16, 17, 18, honestly, he was one of, if not the best young player I think I've ever seen. And I'm sorry, Duncan Ferguson, but I think it just goes without saying that his strike partner is Romelu Lukaku. Now, hit me with it.
Yeah, I mean, no complaints. I mean, I can't believe you got the centre backs the wrong way around. It's such a big thing, you know.
That was a rookie mistake. I know.
Destan was brought in to replace Lescott as a left-footed left side. It was what Moyes always wanted to have. He wouldn't have two right-footed centre backs. I mean, he very briefly, well, due to injuries, had two left-footers, but he always wanted to build on that balance. And with, you know, if rumours are be to believe, we're going to go back to something like that next season. But yeah, I mean, for mine, I went with the 4-2-3-1 formation. I know that's gone really stale now, but I wanted to pick a formation that I've seen us play the most of, and there was only really two standout formations, and it would have been 4-2-3-1 or 4-1-4-1, which was the, you know, Moyes finished fourth in the Champions League places formation. But then even Moyes adapted to an 4-2-3-1 eventually. Mm. You know, Martinez used it, Koeman used it, and Silva used it. It's only really now, under Carlo Ancelotti, we've moved to a proper new formation. There's been variations within, but now, only now we've started to see a proper change. Manager-wise, I'm like you, I've gone for Carlo Ancelotti. I mean, if you could pick a specific moment or a specific season for a manager, then obviously Moyes in 2004-05 or Martinez's first year, you know, strong candidates. But I'm not looking at that list of managers, but Moyes, Martinez, Koeman, Allardyce. Sorry, I was just sick in my mouth a bit then. Marco Silva, and then not picking Ancelotti. Ancelotti is a better manager than them in his sleep. So he hasn't done a lot either, but I just can't pick off that list and not pick Ancelotti, even though he's only been here a few minutes. So the logic of what I've seen only applies when I want it to. In goal, I did go for Tim Howard at first, but I've changed my mind. I agonised over it. I'm going to have to go
Nigel Martin.
With Nigel Martin. I mean, I was born in 1989, but I've mentioned on previous podcasts, I got into football quite late. I was a teenager when I got into football, so all the 90s didn't bother with it, and probably for the best, because my dad took a bite, so if I'd have bothered with it, I'd be one. Got into it when I was older, and you know, got taken to Goodison Park, and you know, the rest is history. So Nigel Martin, in that, as good as Howard was, even though he went a little bit, you know, off the boil, he stayed a little bit too long. I think everyone, you know, accepts that. But Martin in that season, 2003-2004, kept us in the Premier League. He was immense. He was coming right to the end of his career, and he was just so good. So I've just gone for Nigel Martin in goal. Back four of Coleman, Jagielka, Lescott, Baines. Sorry, Sylvain, if you watch this, if Max sends you this. That was another close one, but I was always a Lescott guy over a Distan guy, not against Distan. I just thought Lescott and Jagielka for their partnership were just fantastic. Obviously, Baines and Coleman speak for themselves. In midfield, at the base of the midfield, I've got Mikel Arteta, just one of the best players I've seen play for Everton. Before his injury, he was just one of the best midfielders in the Premier League. I mean, Match of the Day on BBC don't seem to realise he played most of his Premier League career at Everton. You know, put out a little tweet for his, was it his birthday? They put a tweet out of his...
I tweeted that and then I deleted it because I looked like a nag and, you know...
No, they put
like a little bit.
For those who didn't see it, BBC Match of the Day's Twitter account put out a happy birthday message to Arteta with like a highlight video of his Premier League goals, and every single one was Arsenal. He scored more goals at Everton and had more appearances at Everton in his Premier League career, but they acted like he'd just played for Arsenal. Like, what the hell? So Arteta, and this was the hardest part of the team, Gareth Barry, because I was agonising over Idrissa Gueye. Because Idrissa Gueye was quality. He's gone on to Paris Saint-Germain and looks the part there amongst all the superstars around him, like Mbappe and Neymar. He looks a quality player, and that's because he is. Everyone's acting like it's a new thing. We've known for years, quality player, and we, you know, we didn't make the most of having him because we were in flux as a club. But I've got to go with Gareth Barry. Absolute class act. That even when Martinez's teams had the wheels starting to come off, he was just the consummate, you know, professional. His levels never dropped. He was a fantastic player. I just wish we'd got him when he was younger, so we'd have got more time out of him. There was some seasons where the end of season awards should have just been him having a three-course meal by himself.
Wearing gazelles.
Yeah, exactly. So Arteta and Barry. Across the three attacking midfielders, on the left, we've gone for Steven Pienaar. Speaks for itself. Pienaar and Baines, one of the strongest combinations down one side we've had. He was just a great player. A criminally underrated player. I don't think he gets nearly as much, you know, credit as he deserves for the Premier League, you know, midfielders. Tim Cahill in the middle. That was another one that was sort of close because Fellaini was, you know, was a good player, but you know, there's just no one except Tim Cahill was that he... A big game player, and you know, we haven't had many of them since he's left. Boy, absolute quality, the best little Australian we know. I think that's how it goes. On the right, I had to get him in because the right was the weakest position in the team, and although he's not been here that long, Richarlison,
yeah,
he's a I know he's a striker, but it's my team, so and he can play there. Proper Everton player, fights for the badge, works his arse off, loves the fans, loves the birds in town, scores goals, and he's a moody get. Love him, absolutely love him. And up front, again, you know, I saw Rooney when he broke through, but I always feel like we didn't get the best of Rooney. I always feel like he really caught light. By the time he really caught fire when he left. And I remember when I was young and I cried when I watched him.
Broke me heart, that, you know.
The first game after the Euros, loved the Euros. He was still here at the Euros, and I was like loving every minute of it. We'd known about him, and he exploded onto the international stage. Then he goes to Man United, and he's playing his first game, and he's in the Man United tunnel with a rip in his top, and he's playing Fenerbahce, and he just ruins them. And I was just like, oh, he caught fire when he left Everton, and he only came back when he'd gone out. That was the way I looked at it. Like a quality player, you know, credit to our academy, England's most successful ever player or captain or you know whatever it is, goal scorer, all these other accolades. Maybe not player because you know Bobby Moore and all that. But I just can't fit him in. Our top Premier League goal scorer, Romelu Lukaku, is just a no-brainer. I don't think anyone who's done this template hasn't included him. They may have given him a partner here and there, but there's no one who's not got Lukaku in that team. An absolute goal machine. Just every single game he played, you knew he was good for a goal. He covered up the ills of some poor managers. And once he was gone, there was nowhere to hide for a lot of players and a lot of managers. He wasn't the perfect player, but he was an absolute beast of a goal scorer. The most gifted natural goal scorer since probably Gary Lineker was at the club.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that.
Honourable mentions go to you know the likes of Kubu, Andy Johnson, who did well when they were here. Obviously, Duncan Ferguson, an icon of the club. Who's, you know, you say your hero when you grow up with Arteta, man, was Duncan Ferguson. And if this team had a bench, he'd definitely be on it.
Yeah.
But, so Lukaku. So the only thing I've changed from me Instagram is probably Martin for Howard. There was a few close calls in the team, though. So go on, let's hear it.
No, I think that's a pretty... solid team, but because I when I look at these teams, I'm thinking about the practicality of them. I think Tom played a really weird 4-3-3 with a midfield of Pienaar, Arteta, and Cahill. I'm thinking that team's just gonna leak goals, like this got no defensive cover whatsoever.
So was it Tom who was including players he was 2 months old for as well? Was it?
Yeah.
No, I mean if I did that, I'd absolutely roast everyone. Like. The only one who's older than me is Jerry, and he didn't start watching. So I could turn around and you know I could throw Southall in and you know, what have you, but I just can't. I'm doing it from when I've watched it because I can speak to that.
Yeah, I was gutted that I couldn't put watching Kanchelskis because he just seemed like an absolute terror on the pitch. Anders Limpar as well seemed like a good little player from before my time. But on your team, you've got. The main man, Gareth Barry, sitting in between the two centre halves, like just protecting the back four as the full backs bomb on, which just, it was boss to watch, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the problem with a lot of the like these picks, other than the Moyes players, you know, the Kales, the Pienaars, the Artetas, some of them you sort of like. There was some players who would, you know, if they hadn't have tailed off as badly as they did, you know, you could make an argument for it. Kevin Morales was fantastic at first.
Yeah.
James McCarthy looked like he was going to be a beast. You know what I mean?
There's
loads of players we've had who've been quality in short spells, but then like it's tailed off badly, or they've not. You know, the managers haven't, you know, have come and gone, and you know, like the club's been in too much turmoil. Like it's an indictment on the mismanagement of the club that was still going back to so many Moyes players. But you know, I've managed to get a current player in Richarlison, and hopefully in a few years we turn around and we're going, you know what, it was really tough to decide who to pick between Calvert-Lewin and Lukaku, and you know, it sounds mad to say now, but who knows, like. We could turn around and go, oh, well, you know, as good as Jagielka was, I've got to put Holgate in, you know, that kind of thing. There's always that aspirational aspect to it, but yeah, we'll see.
Fingers crossed. And I mean, as I say, it's also like, obviously the more easy that we've got the most evidence for as to who we can put on there. But I'm just thinking from my bench, Ferguson, James McCarthy, because I love watching James McCarthy in his prime alongside Gareth Barry. And dare I say it, and I'm probably going to get slaughtered for saying this, but Ross Barkley. I love Ross Barkley in his prime, you know. He only showed it for a combination of, like, in spurts of 45 minutes over an allotted season, but I feel like that is just a very well-built number 10 for the modern game. And he's still very inconsistent at Chelsea today, but he puts in performances like he did against us when they trounced us 4-0. And, you know, there are still flashes of, you know, that Gascoigne type that the media sort of lauded them as.
Yeah. I mean, if we're talking benches, there's a few. I mean, I haven't got a set-up bench, but, like, players who just missed out for me, like Howard, Distan, Idrissa Gueye, Duncan Ferguson, Yakubu. So the players as well who were so unsung, but they were so good for us, like Lee Carsley, you know, was that one in the 4-1-4-1, you know, like in between the midfield and the defence, and the whole team ticked because of him. Not an exciting player, not a not a player with sauce. Help me out, Max. I'm young. A sourceless player, like not a highlights player, but dead important.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And it would be pretty cool to see definitely some of the older viewers and audience put down their team of their lifetime. And I'm sure it'd just be the 84-85 lineup.
Yeah, anyone who saw it would just throw that 84-85 team in at you, and then you're gone. Or the odd one might go, you know what, I prefer Lineker to Gray. You know, the odd thing like that. But, you know, eventually it'll get to the point where these are odds, because if you have a certain age, you pick all the Moyes players. If you have an even older age, you pick the 80s teams. Hopefully, you know, we come back and do this in another 5 years. It's a lot harder, put it that way.
Fingers crossed that we pick up some silverware in that time and make a few legends of the lads that we've got today.
Yeah, hopefully.
Cool. So we'll round up the podcast for you guys now. And just sort of off the cuff sort of discussion, really. Obviously, as we all know, the UK is in lockdown at the minute, and Everton have been coming out with these. Obviously, they've come out with their brilliant Blue Family campaign, where they've been contacting all the fans and those that are vulnerable during this time of isolating. But something else that I've found quite interesting that they've been doing is they've been putting on like daily schedules, which is either, you know, at 2 o'clock, we've got a live workout for you to do. At 4 o'clock, we've got a Leighton Baines interview. And at 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, we've got Luca Dean reading your kids Tiger Who Came for Tea, which I thought it was a little PR stunt given the popularity of Tiger King at the minute. But
I like conspiracies, Max, but Jesus, that's a bit. I mean, Jerry always says to me, I get my conspiracy theorist hat on when I come to it, but I think that is a stretch.
I wanted someone to Photoshop Luca Dean's face onto Joe Exotic's face in the comment. Just have it there. But, just a sort of like normal conversation. Like, what have you been doing? What do you plan to do over during this time we're locked up? Because Sunderland Till I Die has just come out today, hasn't it? And I know you're big into that.
Yeah, you took the words out of my mouth. I obviously said at the top of the podcast that watched Tiger King, but that was like half a week ago now. Sunderland Till I Die has come out today. You know, we're recording on Wednesday, and I've started watching that. It's just the best football documentary I've ever seen, like how well made it is and everything. I've seen like some good ones as well, you know, the Amazon Prime, you know, All or Nothing stuff's really good. I'm only the third, I'm in the fourth episode of Sunderland Until I Die, so I haven't finished it yet, but as I say, it only come out today.
Season two.
Season two. The first season was the season they were in the championship for the first time. And, you know, did a lot of turmoil, you know, they changed manager a lot and, you know, got a massive hangover from being in the Premier League. They got loads of players on ridiculous contracts and that. And now it's the season after they've gone down again into League One, but they've got new owners, new everything. And you know, it's just, you couldn't pick a better club to do it with. To be honest, that's what I've been doing whilst locked up. I've been, you know, just consuming as much stuff as I can that I've wanted to. I mean, that's new, so, you know, that I would have watched that anyway. But, you know, not in work, I'm watching things that it's been on me. You know, everyone's got like, oh, I'll put that on the list, and then there's no list. You know, when someone suggests something to you, they go, yeah, I'll put it on my list, and you never think about it again.
Mm-hmm.
I'm actually trying to go through stuff that I've got on my own little internal list that I've said I'm going to watch. Sometimes it's old films that I want to see and I've not got round to.
Yeah.
Sometimes another football documentary. It's not all football because, frankly, even the Sunderland one, it's depressing because you don't half miss football. Like, you know, because you're watching the, you know, and you just think, oh, can't wait for this to come back. I'm going to watch that All or Not in Brazil documentary. I started watching I started watching that about a month and a half, 6 weeks ago. But it's all in Portuguese, so it's subtitled. So when I started watching it, I wanted to like listen and just sort of zone in and out like you do, but you can't because you have to sit and dedicate time to watch it, and you know that's more of a commitment than sometimes you want to do. So, but now I've got the time. That as soon as I finish Sunderland, I'm gonna go on to that.
Yeah.
How about you? So what have you been doing? I've been indoors for a week and I've done zero exercise, so I'm gonna have to start that before I die. But that's low on the list. You know, Netflix first.
Yeah, I've been getting me permitted outdoor exercise, single outdoor exercise in there before being given me marching orders by a copper. But just on the sort of football documentary thing, right? Is that Brazil one on Amazon Prime?
Yeah, All or Nothing. It's called Brazil. Yeah. I really like the one on Man City they done a few years ago.
Yeah.
But obviously this Brazil national team, it takes in the what was the competition called? Copa America.
When Richarlison got the winning penalty.
Yeah, it's obviously not in English, so it's a very different watch. You can't just you know read something else, look at your phone and all that while it's on. You've got to sit and watch it, but it's obviously more interesting for us because it's got our star player in it. Like it's the City one was just interesting because you saw behind the scenes with players you recognise and know.
Yeah.
But you know, you didn't care. You know what I mean? You're just watching it. Whereas this one, you care. You get to see more of like, you know, and especially a player who doesn't speak much English, because you don't. You know, you sort of get a vibe for Calvert-Lewin and you know the other and you know Andre Gomes and you know, the players who speak really good English. Or are English, the ones who don't, like the Vieri Minas and the Bernards and the Richarlison, you don't get to see as much of them as you do the others, and it's really good. But from what I've watched, I don't half want us to buy David Neres. Just because I just want to see David Neres and Richarlison just rolling around Crosby trying to get on all the Scouse birds that were going into town. Both are kind of proper boys, aren't they?
I will start a GoFundMe to get David Neres to Everton. Because
to be honest, though, it's probably not for the best that I want, because every time I wish for a player, they end up shit. I wanted Davy Klasa loads. And watch, David Neres will get here, and he'll be one lazy bastard, or he won't be able to transfer his ability into the Premier League. So I just need to keep my head down and stop wishing for players, because I never get it right. When I pine for a player, it never ends up.
But I will definitely get round to that. It's the Brazilian national team, man. Like, if you're into football, why wouldn't you watch a documentary on the Brazilian national team? But I was really into the Amazon production of football documentaries. So like, I'm halfway through the Dortmund one as well. So like, what I'm going to try and explain is I've not touched Sunderland Till I Die. I don't want to touch it because I seen a Twitter ad for it before, and it looked like a scene out The Office. It's just like their executives are non-footballing people trying to make like a connection with football, and it's just not happening. And it just makes me feel so sad for their fans, what they've had to go through.
Yeah, I feel sorry for Sunderland fans, because this new season I'm watching, it's even more car crash. Like, this is not one to watch for the football. This is one to watch for the behind the scenes. But you do really feel, I mean, if you're a Geordie, I'm sure you don't, but there's literally documented evidence of the sort of, I don't want to say demise, because they're still here and you've got a chance of coming back up, but just the dismantling of Sunderland Football Club, like the people who were in charge. And I've just finished an episode, I won't give too much away if people haven't seen it, but they're doing, basically it's the transfer deadline day in January, and oh my God, it's terrifying that, you know, the stuff that goes on. And it makes you think, it's not realistic to think that, you know, things like this don't happen at my club, maybe not to the same degree or as egregious. But, you know, like the slapdash rush, like you imagine, or at least I do, that the top clubs are, you know, well organised, you know, on the ball. Yeah, professional is the word, yeah. And it's not just done like it is on computer games, where you just throw six bids in and eventually you'll get it. No, some clubs as big as Sunderland, it really is like that. It's just, you know, bid after bid after bid, and then, you know, the other club wants, you know, triple the money, and then, you know, there's an hour to go before deadline, and the chairman caves, and you just think, oh, just, you know, I just feel so lucky that, you know, Everton are in such a strong position, because Sunderland are a big club, mate, in the state there.
Yeah, and I
just think it could happen to anyone. You get the wrong people in charge and it could be you.
True. On the flip side to that, though, you say, you know, Everton are a big club, we're stable. I sort of, as I say, on the other side of that coin, obviously with me living in Manchester, going to the Etihad so much, and that summer that I worked at Manchester City, that's when I watched the All or Nothing documentary. So yeah. To see the complete and utter professionalism, how they conduct themselves, how an elite club at the peak of their powers conduct themselves in their operations, how the sort of players interact, and the sort of the progression of it. It was that record setting season when they got over 100 points. Like, it was just absolutely incredible. So, like,
yeah, you do see, like, I mean, hopefully, you'd like to think that Everton would be more that than, you know, obviously not levels of success on the pitch, but like operationally, everyone who comes into the club, like Brand said it when he came, like with a Champions League outfit off the pitch, were absolutely fantastic. And once again, with this situation with coronavirus, we're showing again what a fantastic football club we are. But it just goes to show how easily, if the wrong people, you know, get in charge of the club, doesn't matter how many good people are at the club or how many clever people, if you've got the wrong man at the wheel, then you can you just sail into some rocky waters. And I feel so sorry for the Sunderland fans, just because they're not unrealistic. They're not, like, you know, looking to, you know, conquer the world. They just want to feel like their club is together and in the right direction again, and they're just struggling to get that. And I just think, God, there but for the grace of God goes. You must be feel so helpless if you're a supporter of a club who are like that.
I know. He's talking about having someone who's professional at the wheel. Like, I thank me lucky stars that we've got Carlo Ancelotti as our manager. You know, I genuinely feel like that's the first step onto pushing us into that Manchester City direction. You know, I do.
Yeah, I mean, you can never guarantee success on the pitch, but you've got to put all the things in place off it to try and make it happen. And it just makes me think, basically, that I hope Brands has got in complete control of this club, because no matter how well-meaning you are, executives with money don't always make the best decisions. So I would cringe at the idea of Mascheri, as much as I love Mascheri and how much he's facilitated, you know, some of the best things, you know, the investments in players, the stadium and what have you. It makes me think on the decision-making side for transactions, just think, if you don't let someone who knows what they're doing make those decisions, you end up making mistakes no matter how well-meaning they are. And it just makes me cringe the idea of any club at a, you know, at a top flight level not having a director of football. It staggers me after watching this that Man United haven't got one, a club of that size.
They're just
letting a chief executive and a novice manager make their decisions, no matter, you know, how good Solskjaer's decisions might be or Ed Woodward's business acumen. You just think, oh, there needs to be someone there for a club that size.
Should have rarely mentioned this in the first segment, but have you seen the valuation of Manchester United as a stock market entity now?
What is it?
I think it's over half a billion. It's heavy. It's not nice to see this.
But isn't that one of those things that can, you know, change overnight? You know, like I said, if a vaccine came out tomorrow, say, wouldn't that just bounce back?
You'd like to think so, but again, I suppose that opens that kind of worm for the potential.
That's a massive if, like, obviously, but
yeah, that's the potential impact that this could have on football. But yeah, man, it's strange times, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, the impact of this will be felt for a long time, and there's. Nobody saw I don't want to get off on a tangent, non-football tangent, but nobody saw the rise of populism in 2016 coming, like, you know, in politics. Politics seemed really dusty and, you know, sort of rigid and routine. You know, like, oh, you'll get, you know, varying shades of politicians and what have you, and then all of a sudden, bam, you know, populism takes off and people who you know, like Donald Trump can become, you know, like president and that was something that no one saw coming. Obviously, this pandemic might have a massive effect on the world as well, a bigger an effect than that. You know, like, might not even affect politics, but it might do, you know what I mean? It might change the way we look at things. You could suddenly come out of this and all of a sudden the whole world suddenly is really, really on it for climate change, because we've now seen once the cage is rattled just a little bit, how inconvenient it is, and people turn around and go, right, then we're not having that happen again. Or it could not. It could be something completely different. It could be even, you know, all of a sudden, I mean, I don't know whether this would be the case. There's a massive wave of anti-Chinese sentiments, and, like, we suddenly don't get everything from China like we do now, or it could be something else. Like, there will be major, major global societal changes based off the back of this, because it's too big to not have an effect, but we don't know what it'll be.
Yeah. To end on a slightly higher note, after... After binging Tiger King, would you recommend Sunderland Till I Die, and would I go season one to season two, or just stick season two on?
At this point, I'd stick season two on. Like, it recaps... Okay. roughly, like, it doesn't have a full breakdown, but you follow football, you don't need to know what happened to Sunderland that season. You'll probably watch season two and then go back to season one, but I've just watched season two at this point because it's more recent, and you know that they went down a second time and all that stuff. So, but if I was to say watch one of them, watch Tiger King. That's honestly, watch it. Once you get off this with me, watch it.
Okay, I will do.
Stick past season episode one, sorry, and you won't regret it. It just it doesn't give you a minute to get your gloves up.
All right, cool. Teddy, take care, man. Look after yourself and everybody else out there. As I say, look after yourselves, look after your families. You know, stick to this lockdown. Don't be gathering in groups. It's not wise. And stop panic buying toilet roll, you dickheads. It's just a stupid thing to do.
Wash your hands.
Yeah, wash your hands as well. Take care, everyone.